I'll never forget the first moment when I walked in Q Cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to Skanon Podcast number 72.
I know nothing special about that number.
Nor do I.
It was a good year, that's about all.
It was a very good year. Am I drunk?
What? Jason is away from us this week, but we got Philip back. He escaped from the clutches of the West.
The clutches of the West were very pleasant, thank you. That doesn't sound right.
Unless it was made
more like the caresses of the West.
The wild Atlantic way.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that there. Good grief.
So, since you're back and you have 2 weeks worth of viewing, what have you been watching?
Not a lot. I'll mention two things I rewatched, and I'll keep it at two because they're both quite long and they're both quite interesting. First of all, I rewatched Nixon.
Love Nixon! The film, not the person. No. Just to be clear on that.
The thing about Nixon is, and this is Oliver Stone's 1995, not quite biopic, but isn't.
More of a biopic than JFK.
More of a biopic.
Less of a biopic than W.
Well,
on the sliding scale of Nick Stone.
Is W a biopic, or is it like a love fest for a guy he doesn't really like, which is very strange?
Well, the thing is, you could ask the same question about Nixon, and it's very sympathetic. Short of maybe Robert Altman's Secret Honor, it's the most sympathetic portrayal of Nixon I can think of on film. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and it's helped by one of those great, great turns that Anthony Hopkins turned out in the mid to late 90s that just make you remember that he was more than just Hannibal Lecter, is more than just Hannibal Lecter. He is still with us at the time of going to press.
Sorry, Sir Tony.
He's listening in.
Yeah.
He didn't accept it in knighthood, did he not? Because...
Dinos?
Yeah, because he claimed to be no longer a British citizen.
Oh, okay. Apologies, Tony.
Only. he's like the polar opposite of Sir Ben, Sir Kingsley, Sir. Must call him Sir.
Sir.
Esquire.
In fairness, if you got knighted, wouldn't you do that too?
But Hopkins is great, you can see that in the fact that he doesn't particularly look like Nixon, it doesn't matter.
He doesn't even do an impression, from what I recall the film.
His voice is a little gruff, that's about as much.
Yeah, and yet you forget it. Like, it's a 2.5 hour film, I think.
It's over three hours.
See, it only feels like a 2.5 hour film. That's quite a recommendation. But yeah, you forget about an hour into it that he's not doing an impersonation, that he doesn't look much like him and he doesn't sound at all like him. Well, he sounds a little bit like him.
Yeah.
So I think that's a testament to it.
But the fact that it's so long, it allows Stone just to throw everything into the mix, besides the Watergate scandal, which makes up a large part of the beginning and the end of the film. There's, just about his life and how he rose up the political ladder to get where he did, and basically conclude that his own insecurity has led to his downfall.
I think you can judge how sympathetic the film is to Nixon by the fact that Oliver Stone still works in a reference to the conspiracy behind the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, yeah.
But has Nixon walk out of it. That's how sympathetic the film is to Nixon.
Yeah.
And it's got a great cast, even outside of Hopkins. It's
Hopkins is just, he's great, but he's got Joan Allen, Mary Steenburgen, James Woods.
Bob Hoskins is J. Edgar Hoover, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is. A very flamboyant J. Edgar Hoover.
I remember with the bathrobes at the races, wasn't it?
Bathrobes by the pool.
By the pool.
I seem to recall, and then he's at the races.
Okay.
Making googly eyes at a waiter and things like that.
This is my condensed 2.5 hour version of
this. This isn't Clint Eastwood's J. Edgar. But although, if it was Clint Eastwood playing J. Edgar Hoover, that I would say.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
But it's great. The length of film probably will put a lot of people off. And you could probably see where it could be nipped and tucked a bit. But on the whole, very watchable, very interesting. Very oddly enjoyable.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say oddly enjoyable. I'd say very enjoyable.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll move on to my second choice, which is most definitely enjoyable. I also rewatched, from the same year, actually.
I thought you were going to go Frost Nixon. Just keep going with
just
Nixon.
Just complete your Nixon. And we're all building to Elvis and Nixon.
That's not happening again. No, that's a...
Liked Frost.
It's a stage play.
It is
a stage play. It's Langella who says it.
I like Michael. I think Michael Sheen is underrated. But anyway,
an impersonator.
Ho ho.
I don't know. He's great in Twilight. Oh wait.
Underworld? No. Hold on. Sorry, Michael.
Sorry about that. Sorry, Shuri.
We've got a lot of famous listeners this week. No, my other one is Casino.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw it on my DVD shelf and I thought, heck, I'll watch Casino again. And I did. And it's so much fun. It is profane, it is bloody, it is OTT, it's operatic, and it doesn't give a damn. This is Scorsese going full tilt on the colours and the pizzazz, and it's basically Scorsese. It's Vegas, yeah. So it has to be. And so it's not as finessed as Goodfellas, it's not as you know, thematically probing as something like Raging Bull or King of Comedy, but it's, you know, it's a classic rags to a lot of riches to less riches story, and a lot of people get whacked on the way.
Yeah, I love Casino. I think Casino is horribly underrated in this great Scorsese filmography.
I would agree. I mean,
it's not a Stone Gold classic, but I think it got dismissed when it came out as a knockoff of Goodfellas.
Yeah,
which is not at all, apart from the fact it features gangsters and it's non-linear.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that, you know, the kind of characters that are being portrayed, especially Joe Pesci, they're not a million miles off what they played in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the fact that they're just that bit more of everything.
Yeah.
It is nastier than Goodfellas. And the fact that all the glitz and glamour of Vegas are thrown in there can't cover it up.
Well, you know the famous story about the head vice scene?
Yeah.
There's a scene where
he puts the guy's head in the vice.
And
you made me put your head in vice to protect that mother... And so on.
Sound clip provided, courtesy of Warner Brothers. but the that sequence was put in, I believe, for Scorsese. What he wanted was a scene that he could send to the MPAA, have them come back with a list of notes, and he'd take it out. He only put it in so that it'd be something outrageous that the censors would focus on, so he could pull it out and cut it and get his R rating.
Yeah.
However, he sent it off. It got submitted, it got approved,
mm-hmm.
Which led him to a weird situation where he had the scene in the film, although he didn't really want it there.
Mm.
And if he took it out, he'd have to resubmit it again and go through the whole phase.
Yeah.
So there's a fun fact about that scene, which is remarkably violent, even considering the film that's around it.
Yeah, it's one of the most memorable parts of the film.
Oh, it is.
But there's a lot to recommend in it. It's one of De Niro's liveliest turns. He doesn't just let the colourful suits of Ace Rothstein do the talking. He's well able to mouth off. He's having a bit of fun there with the, you know, the cigarette holder, and he's enjoying the glamour.
Yeah.
Pesci does what Pesci does best. He's very,
loud,
very angry.
Yeah.
And Sharon Stone, who got the film's only Oscar nomination, is terrific as Mrs. Rothstein, who ultimately becomes a very key component in the downfall of the whole Vegas mob scheme.
Right. Here's something I've been thinking about in the Grand Martin Scorsese filmography, right? Is Casino...
I should point out, we are missing our big Scorsese fan.
We are.
But
so I apologise for this horrible inaccuracy that is about to befall you. If Jay were here, he could stop it. But
I'm not apologising for nothing. Go on.
So in the Grand Scorsese filmography, right, so you've got Goodfellas on one end, and you've got, say, Wolf of Wall Street on the other. I think Casino is halfway between the two.
In terms of
style and in terms of content and theme, I think it's very much, it's livelier than Goodfellas while sharing some of the same themes about materialism, about consumption, about aggression, about masculinity. And I think it's sort of, you take it, what Scorsese did in, say, Wolf of Wall Street, was you push that further.
Yeah.
So I think you can very much see a sort of a sliding scale within those three films.
I would agree. And I would argue, and I know plenty of people would disagree with me on this, I think a slight sliding scale in quality. I prefer Casino to Wolf of Wall Street, but of course neither can touch Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Wolf of Wall Street immensely, but it just felt like, you know, in terms of his judgment of his main character, I couldn't stop sitting on the fence. Whereas Casino is just completely against these guys from the start. You are willing to watch them fall.
You watched both Wall Street. You thought it didn't outright condemn Belford. I thought it was pretty scary. I thought it was pretty clear.
I don't know.
Condemns him while indulging in his lifestyle.
Yeah, as confirmed by the fact that that the real Belford has a cameo.
That's a fair point. But
I found that a sore sticking point.
But don't some of the gangsters who informed some of his work in, say, Goodfellas? I mean, now, I may be wrong about this, and please correct me if I am. But are not some of the background supporting people involved in that film in some way related to that
world? I wouldn't doubt
world?
They are, but I... It feels... I've always felt like there's a greater sense of moral closure in Goodfellas. Everybody pays a price.
But
in
I think
Wolf of Wall Street, there's less of... It feels more celebratory in its way.
Well, but I think the point of Wolf of Wall Street, though, is that nobody pays a price. Like that's the central moral point, is that our society isn't structured in a way to make somebody as monstrous as Belford pay a price.
Yeah, if you get monumentally rich, then you
can get away with so much.
Yeah, exactly, and that's holding up a mirror to society rather than, trying to critique it in any way.
Maybe I don't know. I have issues with Wolf of Wall Street as much as I enjoy it, but that's just me. I'm sorry, I've prattled on far too long at this stage. Anyway, Casino, lots of fun. Enjoyably nasty and nastily enjoyable.
Darren. Okay, cool. So, a bunch of films this week, but we'll try and breeze through most of them. I watched all three of the original Jurassic Parks. I stand by my assessment that Lost World is the best Jurassic Park sequel, and that Jurassic Park or Jurassic World is better than Jurassic Park 3, which is just terrible. Not that Jurassic World isn't terrible, but Jurassic Park 3 is just terrible. Also watched The Intern for the third time, somewhat improbably. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me why.
Because you just love late era Robert De Niro.
And Nora Ephron. sorry, not Nora. Apologies. But it was not a good film. It's a grand.
So why are you watching it for a third time if it's not that good?
It happens and I can't stop it. It was not my choice.
Mooney Family Movie Night.
Mooney Family Movie Night, ladies and gentlemen. Democracy in action. Forget the U.S. presidential election.
Is there a space between in and action?
Yeah. At some point, you're going to need a totalitarian regime there.
You write about films. Surely you can inform them with a better judged opinion.
Hi-o. No, I'm a big fan of opening it out and encouraging people to watch what they want, even when what they want is not particularly good. The Intern is not bad as far as late period Robert De Niro goes, which is probably the best endorsement that you can give it. It does feature two jokes about Robert De Niro's erection, which I think puts it on a short slippery slope from there to Dirty Grandpa.
Well, that features many jokes
about Robert De Niro. It's like you find what works and you just go with it.
No, I did not.
I just wanted to be sure.
I read enough reviews about Dirty Grandpa to know that the central conceit is he's trying to sleep with a teenager.
This is how you insult somebody on film podcast. You insinuate that they've seen Dirty Grandpa.
I've seen Bad Grandpa.
Bad Grandpa's Johnny Knoxville, right? Which is, you have to worry when you're confused between the movie starring that guy from Jackass and the movie starring possibly one of the greatest actors of his generation.
And the one from the guy from Jackass is actually better.
It is.
it is
less offensive.
Somehow.
Even though it does contain a scene where he defecates on a wall.
Spoilers! For any of the listeners at
home. I don't think I need to see this now.
Sorry, you're taking the edge off there.
That's actually Academy Award nominee, Bad Grandpa.
Yes, it is for makeup. Is that what you're talking about?
It's that old Norbus conundrum.
Oh, yes. Well, no. The Norbit conundrum is you've got an actor nominated for Best Supporting Actor and you really want to sabotage him, so you release Norbit. It's similar to the Eddie Redmayne or the failed Eddie Redmayne gambit that happened with Jupiter Ascending. If you just make sure you have a big budget embarrassing project lined up when one of your competitors has lined up an Oscar home run for Best Actor.
And like Halle Berry, Catwoman and Monsters Ball.
Yeah.
although Catwoman came out afterwards. But yeah,
not during the Oscar race. But what is interesting about The Intern, though, and it's something that happened a bit last year, is it's a completely conflict-free movie.
We had a few of those.
We did. We had The Martian as well.
And Chef.
Yeah, and I'm sort of... And they're fairly high-profile releases, and they did fairly well, and they seemed to find an audience response. And I just found it interesting in the context of this year, where it's all everybody's fighting everybody about everything.
And not just on screen.
Not just on screen, off screen as well. That you had this weird period, this weird lacuna period, sort of in late summer last year, where everybody seemed to get along and just be really nice and competent towards each other.
That reminds me, you and I, we saw a film just the other day, which is released this year,
yes,
and is beautifully free of conflict and indeed plot to a large extent. Yeah. But we'll talk more about that next week or next month.
Spoilers, it's Green Room. it is not Green Room.
We are still fighting about that.
We are still fighting.
Top Cat Billions.
Yeah.
What a title. And no, it is not that either.
And finally, I finally saw Crimson Peak, which I liked. I know it got a lot of negative word of mouth. Because it has no plot.
It doesn't. My God, is it beautiful.
It's a beautiful looking film.
And it's full of all this evocative imagery, which doesn't necessarily really mean anything, but looks pretty.
Which Del Toro does well, but it's even better when he actually does manage to marry it. So the problem with Crimson Peak is it has no idea what it wants to be. Is it a gothic horror, or is it a romance?
I think it's a gothic romance. I think it splits the difference.
You can have both. Carmen
you can, but it doesn't marry them together very well. It's not particularly scary.
No, it's not.
And as a romance goes, I don't buy it. Hiddleston and Vajakovska, they are okay. Chastain, little bit miscast, I think.
I thought she did very well.
She did fine, but I feel like I've seen Eva Green do that role many times before and better.
Yeah. You imagine Eva Green got the first pass on that. It was like, I don't want to be known as the crazy witch woman.
Yeah,
I've got Penny Dreadful to worry about,
and Dark Shadows, and 300 Rise of an Empire.
And all those other comic book adaptations I've been in and managed to be the best thing in by a country mile.
Yeah,
she is.
Not that, although one might suggest she sort of stacks the deck by choosing the films that she chooses. If one were being cynical,
I would say that's actually a pretty clever way of selling yourself.
Yeah. You know, I am the best thing about
so many
A Dame to Kill For.
Well, that wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, or the best thing about Rise of an Empire.
That wouldn't be hard.
Yeah. All right, so that's
it has generic leading man number one.
No, number two. They already got through Jared Butler.
Jared Butler's not generic. He's just rubbish.
I think he's sort of generic. Like he says, like he is. If you were imagining a person to sell you razor blades, it would be him. And it is him.
Him or David Morrissey, who sells everything.
Morrissey's so much more compelling.
As a presence, he's got a lot more intensity. He's got a darker edge to him.
He does. Butler is just kind of swaggering in as generic. The Sean Connery approach, but he's never going to play Bond.
Yeah.
David Morrissey would make a great Bond villain.
He would.
Yeah.
I would watch that. I would watch the hell out of that.
Jared Butler would make a terrible Bond villain.
And a terrible Bond. We feel the need to put that out there now that the idea is floating. Yeah. Terrible Bond. Thanks, Phil. If this happens, it's on you.
My pleasure.
And that's me, Niall.
Today it is May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. But yesterday it was May the 4th. So...
You watch all the Star Trek films.
I watch Star Wars and A New Hope and Return of the Jedi.
Really interesting choice.
It was what was on Sky Movies when I turned on Sky Movies. That's how it worked. Plus,
also known as how Darren watched most of his recent Nicolas Cage films.
I love Star Wars. Around my TV... Right,
I've seen his TV. I'm bracing myself.
Around my TV is a Lego Millennium Falcon. There's a thing of a Chewbacca toy. There's also one for Han Solo. Then there's Beaker and Dr. Bunsen Honeydew as C-3PO and R2-D2. So suffice to say that there's an awful lot of Star Wars memorabilia around my TV. So I adore Star Wars. So. I was quite happy.
I feel like a phenomenon has completely bypassed me. And I've seen them. I mean, they're
Did you see
fine.
Them at the formative age?
Yeah, see, I had the bedspreads and all the rest. I had Return to Jedi and Empire Strikes Back bedspreads. You know?
I should point out he's older than me, though.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think you missed out on it because you're...
And you sort of fell between
but a lot,
that
of, But a lot of people my age love them as well. I'm sorry.
But,
a lot of people of every age like them. I will never understand.
It happens. I don't like Lord of the Rings that much.
Okay, fair enough. You know? I like Lord of the Rings, but the original trilogy, they're fine.
The second one's pretty good. You prefer Return of the Jedi, if I remember correctly.
I enjoy Jedi about as much as I enjoy Empire.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Don't get me started on the prequels.
Yeah.
It rhymes like poetry.
The heck are you talking about?
Isn't that George Lucas's famous defense of the prequels? He's like constructing a film trilogy that rhymes. It's like poetry. Oh, and yes, I'm making hand gestures here for the listeners at home.
T.S. Eliot's rolling in his grave.
But earlier in the week, I rewatched Star Trek, the 2009 reboot.
This is for about the 30th time.
Yeah, because it's my
Catching up on Guardians.
It's my go-to comfort movie. It's when I've been unwell recently, and so when I'm unwell, I go to Raiders or 2009 Star Trek.
I will grant you that the original, the 2009 Star Trek.
You almost called it the original Star Trek.
Well, it was tempting, but then again, it's no Robert Wise movie.
That is for to its benefit.
Yeah, it's that's not a good film. But yeah, good fun.
And then I
I'm not a Star Trek fan either. I should point that out.
Sinead hadn't seen Deadpool, so we watched Deadpool.
What did you do that for?
It's good.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah,
it's not
pleasant.
It's not brilliant.
Pleasant?
By any means.
Oh, it is pleasant.
It's nothing pleasant about it. It's crass, it's immature, and it is deeply, deeply unpleasant to all concerned.
I agree with you on the first two, but that's why it's pleasant.
It's kind of, it's fun and it's anarchic and
juvenile and stupid and energetic and hyperactive.
If I want to see somebody trying to put a definitive spin on hyperactive and crass and, you know, that kind
John
of
Waters.
I was actually going to say Scorsese's Mean Streets, but yeah, John Waters. Good call. Good call.
You heard it here first. John Philip Waters compares Deadpool to the work of John Waters and Mean Streets.
But comparing it in a very, very unfavorable light, I should point that out.
Pink Flamingos meets Mean Streets.
Yeah,
this is Deadpool.
It's Deadpool. There's your full quote. You can add that one for free, Ryan.
Clear. No, let the record show. I'll never make that comparison again.
I like Deadpool.
But recently, Olivia Munn has been talking about her upcoming role in X-Men Apocalypse. And she turned down the female character in Deadpool.
Which is probably a good call.
It was a very good call because that is a horrifically cliched and underwritten role.
The biggest problem with Deadpool is that... I wouldn't say it's a script. It's the way, it's the plotting. It's the way that they choose to handle. Like, it points out and acknowledges all the cliches of the superhero narrative,
and
but
it
runs through
it.
Them. Yeah, it is basically, for all it mocks X-Men Origins Wolverine or whatever, it is the same story beat for beat for beat.
Yeah, and all the crassness and, you know, potty mouth and innuendo in the world cannot cover that up.
But I think the charm of its lead cast can. Like, Marina Bacchan.
Marina Bacchan.
There we go, thank you. When I gesture towards you, can you say the name again, just when I need to drop it in? So, great performance.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right.
Ryan Reynolds and
Marina Bacchan
have fantastic chemistry together, and although the role is horribly underwritten, I think
Ms. Bacchan
does great work in it. I think there's charm there to spare.
It testifies the power of any given actor that they can make a role seem beefier than it is.
Yes, even though it's very clearly not.
Except in Homeland, where she could not, because that character is dreadful.
Character is dreadful, but she tries. And I think she did it for like the first season, roughly. Maybe the first half a season.
I remember. She was Brody's wife. And
yeah.
She was,
and
she,
it was a thankless role.
She
it really was,
yeah.
Mostly because of the daughter. It was...
I haven't seen past the first season of Homeland.
Good call. Good call. Although apparently it gets better in the fifth
and fourth.
Really? Okay. I'm still not wading back into that Deadpool.
Let's move on.
On with the news. So, new Irish film Cardboard Gangsters has entered post production. So, really looking forward to seeing this. This is Mark Connor's new one. The guy who gave us King of Travers and Stalker. He's got form. This is heading to the flat, and so
does flat start again now?
The flat is in July. It's
hooray!
The,
nice.
Yeah, first week of July. So this is going to head there, so the post-production will be complete by the end of June, in time for it to play the flat. So it's undergoing an egg at the moment.
Egg?
Egg post-production.
Ah.
One of the leading post-production houses in Dublin. They're all sort of centred in the one general area. It's really cool. It's really handy if you have to visit them.
There speaks the voice of experience.
Yeah. So, this was co-written by John Connors, who, was in King of Travelers before, and so Dave.
I never saw King of the Travelers, but I heard good things.
Oh no, this is great. You should check it out. And so they have a great cast. They have Fionn Walton, who was in What Richard Did, and they have Damien Dempsey in there as well, who was in Between the Canals for Mark Connor.
That reminds me, has anybody seen the US trailer for Sing Street? They're trying to paint Jack Rayner as the star.
Well, it's a TV spot rather than a trailer, because it's only 30 seconds long.
The lead from Transformers 4.
Mark Wahlberg was the lead in Transformers 4.
The second male lead.
Let us never forget.
But they essentially took out for the Walsh Palo out of it completely, which is very, very odd.
Yes.
Because he's the star.
Yeah.
He is really the star, yeah. The band are the star. But
it's his arc, the character.
Everybody's a star!
I know, but
everyone's a winner in their own way.
So, we're really looking forward to Cardboard Gangsters. It will be one of the films that will be heading to the flat. Other films heading to the flat. I totally expect to head to the flat.
Because
it hasn't been confirmed yet.
The value of investment may go down as well as up.
Get your flat pool.
New documentary called Crash and Burn. It's going to preview at the Sheffield Doc Fest, which is the largest documentary film festival in the UK. So it's one of five Irish films going to play there. So Crash and Burn is the story of Tommy Byrne, the race car driver who was part of Eddie Jordan's team back in the 80s, and he raced Formula 3. He won the Formula 3 championship. While he was racing the Formula 3 championship in 1982, he was also testing and driving in Formula 1. He competed in five races in the Formula 1 that year, but still managed to win Formula 3. So he was meant to be one of the greatest drivers to ever come from this country, and it kind of didn't work out for him. So this is the story of his really quick rise and his spectacular fall. He's now living in the States and teaching stunt driving, car driving there.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's directed by the guy, Sean O'Coolan, who did Lone the Spare, The Men at Lunch, if you've seen it. It's a great
skyscraper picture.
Yeah, exactly. And so the film board backed us. And also playing there is Mattress Men, the Mattress Mick documentary, which is currently going down an absolute storm in Toronto.
I must say, I don't know Mattress Mick. I've never met Mattress Mick. Is Mattress Mick that worthy of a documentary?
He has his own film. He produced his own feature-length film as an advertisement for his industry. It's available on YouTube.
Really?
And he has a bunch of things on YouTube. He has his own channel on YouTube.
I must plead my ignorance.
In which he fights against Christopher Walken for the greater good of mankind. Christopher Walken does not play himself. It has to be seen.
The guy. I had to do it.
Mattress Mick. I know you.
Did you play him? Did you? Admit it.
Only you. But when Stephen Fry was over shooting Love and Friendship, he saw a sign for a Mattress Mick and tweeted it, and it went viral.
I saw it. I remember.
The man knows from mattresses.
Yeah, so this is this is directed by Colin Quinn for El Zororo, and it's going down really, really well in Canada at the moment. Toronto Hot Dogs.
It is going to be one of those curios that you're going to look at it and go, this I've got to see.
Exactly. And also playing over there in Toronto is Bobby Sands' 66 Days. Obviously Bobby Sands' documentary about the 66 days that he spent on hunger strike. Northern Irish and Irish co-production. So
see it with a double feature with Mattress Man.
just don't see it in a double feature with Hunger.
Yeah.
Alex Gibney is a consulting producer on Bobby Sands' 66 Days. So.
Is it going to take a side, I wonder?
It's going
to. Is Alex Gibney's involved, I have to ask.
Then also playing in Toronto and Sheffield as well is the Irish, Belgian, Netherlands and Germany co-production The Land of the Enlightened.
Which one of them?
I'm about to say, how do they settle on that? Coin toss.
It's about Afghanistan.
Just confused things.
It's about it was shot over 7 years, and it's about a child's sort of vision of the future and what they're actually living through in Afghanistan. And
I'm going to guess one of those is better than the other, the fantasy, the vision, or the reality.
Well, yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, and but it's an extraordinary looking film. The trailers and stuff are available, and it just looks incredible. I mean, because that landscape is otherworldly,
a rugged beauty.
Yeah,
otherworldly. There should a Star War there next time.
Then there's a short film there called The Grey Area. This played at the Film Fla last year. It also played in Cork. It's a story about an embalmer named Eamon Gray.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry, but if I want to see a film about an embalmer, I'll watch Drop Dead Gorgeous, thank you very much. Kirsten Dunst puts makeup on dead people. It's funny. And she tap dances. That's actually
really It's a little detail that makes it.
It is. But, wow, that's...
You know, I mean...
happy times all round.
Well, mattress maker.
Drop Dead Gorgeous, exactly, the one with Kirstie Alley, the sort of faux reality...
off the point of it, yes.
Yeah, okay, I just want to check,
Bobby
that's Sands, entirely my fault, I'm sorry. You're
Bobby Sands, 66 Days and the Land of Enlightened are playing in competition. They're two of the 12 films that are playing in competition.
At Sheffield,
yeah. I mean, the Sheffield Doc Festival is... massive as well.
Yeah, that's a lot of exposure.
It's the 23rd one, so it means it's been going quite well.
Oh, and it's got a great rep.
So, first ever Irish film to receive an American remake has happened.
Mark your diaries, people.
Yeah.
Really?
And there's going to be a second very soon. So the first one is Midnight Man. It's a horror film that was made in 2003. And
2003?
Was it 2013?
2013,
sorry.
Yeah.
And so it played a hard time and went down really well there. And then, so it's been remade with Robert Englund. And Lin Shaye from the Insidious franchise.
Okay. Who's directing?
Travis Z.
VZ?
Yeah, Travis Z is one of these. Guns for Hire type horror.
Is his surname spelt Z E or is it just okay?
It's like
McGee. Alright.
Oh, there you go.
He recently directed a remake of Cabin Fever.
Why did they remake Cabin Fever? The original, I know the original wasn't very good, but that's not an excuse. It's like the remake of Martyrs. Pointlessness personified.
Anyway, this is great to see.
No, it is. Maybe, it's really great to see.
Yeah, maybe we'll have more of these. But the next one that's going to be made is John Butler's The Stag. That's going to be remade, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's been in the works for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, so this one just completed post-production. Or this one just completed filming and is in post-production.
Oh, okay. So it's actually very...
Well, that's why Midnight Man is going to be the first, because it's in post-production, whereas The Stag one, or The Bachelor Weekend one, hasn't started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's maybe we'll get more of these things where we'll see that small Irish film become a big Hollywood
production. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, once is already a massive hit, isn't it, off Broadway and stuff like that? No, it's not a film remake, but it's...
That was inevitable, though, wasn't it? It's a song. It's a story that makes people happy with songs.
Yeah, but what's surprising is that Sing Street isn't going down as well over there. It's not...
I think it's more particular to Irish social, like...
Once at its core is a kind of love story, and that's a bit more universal. Whereas this,
this is like growing up in Dublin in particular
in the 80s.
Yeah, but Sing Street's also a love story.
Oh, it is.
Yes, but it's not the key. The focus is more
on his
more
experience.
Dependent on his time and place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
Whereas I think you could move once.
And perhaps people are just wary of it being from the director of Begin Again. I don't know.
Begin Again did very well.
I quite liked Begin Again.
One of the highest grossing films in Korea, I'll have you know.
I've heard that.
Good defense, Niall. Good defense. I quite enjoyed it.
I happen to quite like John Carney. So.
Yeah. Back off, Phil.
I'm not begrudging anybody anything. I'm just saying.
Viva opened there last weekend in the States as well. It got 48,000 from 14.
Not bad.
No, for a Spanish language drama, it's not. Yeah. You know, it's not. That's quite good. It's expanding this week. So, on to the top 10. Although we have 11 because RenTrack, our comp scores, they are now, gave us 11. So they.
But which one, rude which one to leave them
which
all.
One is ahead? I suppose is the question. At 10 or 11?
What?
Which one is? Are they tied?
No, they're not tied. No, no.
Oh, why?
No, no.
They just really like number 11.
They thought Jay would be here, and they thought that's included.
Just to wind him up.
Yeah. So, number 11 is Elektra. The
not the Jennifer Garner film.
No, goodness. Personally not. The Met Opera.
Again, they crop up now and again
in
the top 10.
It's very odd. Yeah, or just outside the top 10, apparently.
Yeah. 15 grand is what this made, so.
Ah. In one night, though, that's quite impressive.
Oh, no, it is very much so. Mm. At 10, Ratchet and Clank.
This has got horrific reviews.
Has anybody seen it?
You're joking.
Okay, because
it's an animation based off the
video game.
Off
it?
The video game, yeah.
A PlayStation video game, like from 10 years ago. Right?
My particular favorite is that they built a video game off the movie that's based on the video game. You can buy the video game version of the film.
Well, sure, they did that with Dracula. Remember back in 1991 when Coppola did Dracula, you could buy a novelization of Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was beautiful. Beautiful times, people.
Yeah.
Beautiful times.
Apparently, it's just not very good.
Opened,
did it land with a clank? Did it?
Opened very wide, right? It opened at 46 locations, made 21 grand.
Well, it's animation. I suppose it's, you know, they'll always do okay.
And that's it. Who's the audience for this, right? Because I was going to say, are Ratchet and Clank still, are they still turning out games? Because I remember them from when I was kids.
There was.
Okay, so
there's been a few. Yeah.
So I suspect ADD adult kids aren't going to be that fussy.
Oh.
And for some strange reason, the cast includes Rosario Dawson, Paul Giamatti, John Goodman, and Sylvester Stallone.
I like that cast.
That's actually not a bad cast.
And none of them are the leads.
Okay. Neither's Ratchet nor Clank.
I assume they use the voices from the video game.
Yeah.
Why would you change that?
By that logic, then, you just keep Conroy as Batman forever.
Yes! Yes, you would.
Sorry, Ben.
Ben Affleck does a very good job, but Kevin Conroy's Batman is brilliant.
He is.
At 9, it's Darren's favourite, it's Friend Request.
Just watch Unfriended instead. It's available for free on Sky Movies if you have it. If not, you can pick it up low price at an HMV or an Extravision near you.
Or CEX.
Yeah, just go see Unfriended instead. That is all. That is all that I have to say about this topic.
Okay, then.
Interestingly...
Don't, it'll only hurt him more.
Friend Request and Ratchet and Clank made exactly the same amount per location.
Oh,
wow.
€437 per location.
And almost in as many... they almost have the same amount of locations they're playing in.
Yeah.
Although Friend Request is on the second week.
Yeah.
At 8, it's Sing Street.
Ah, the aforementioned.
Yeah. So Sing Street is in its 7th week.
Yeah.
Church, which is doing really well.
And
just,
great word of mouth.
Just passed £1 million. Here, it passed £1 million on the island.
It's not out in the UK
week.
Until...
the end of the month.
End of the month.
But yeah, it's... I don't know if the staggered release is necessarily the best.
That's what I was thinking, because I was surprised to find out it wasn't out in the UK. I would have thought that the communities are so closely linked that you'd want the buzz at the same time.
They're probably hoping for a bit of word of mouth.
You can understand why it was released here on the Patrick's weekend, but
why they didn't release it abroad sooner?
Maybe they were scared of Batman v Superman.
Yeah,
which is not appearing in this top 10.
No.
Spoiler alert.
It's gone. I noticed that.
Holy crap! And Philip is happy. I feel like we brought some joy here.
The film at number one is exactly in its wheelhouse, isn't it? So,
it's kind of cornered the market on that.
Yeah, but what could that be? Stay tuned to find out.
At 7, it's Bastille Day.
Right.
Bastille yourself, Philip.
Idris Elba trying to, you know, be Liam Neeson, and apparently being the film is about as good as a knockoff will be, apparently. Oh.
Which means it's probably slightly better than a Taken sequel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's maybe not quite as singularly memorable as Taken.
Yes.
Whether that's a good thing or not, it remains to be seen.
So up there with,
Taken.
Well, I was going to say Run All Night or
Stolen, isn't that the Nicolas Cage one?
Oh, yeah. Or 3 Days to Kill with Costner.
No, yeah. That's dreadful.
Just to be clear, although we, as far as taking knockoffs go, we do not endorse
really
3 Days
not
to Kill.
I enjoy that. Oh, God. Amber Heard is... She's a very good-looking girl, but she's not a good actress.
I thought she was grand in
Hayley Steinfeld is
Drive Angry, of all things.
No, she's great in Drive. Drive Angry is like Nicolas Cage. So,
yeah, Drive Angry is like the quintessential like late period Nicolas Cage film. It's
Drive Angry in 3D, Derek.
Yes. Oh, just to be clear on this,
I have it on Blu-ray. It's in 3D.
It's great, isn't it? Sorry,
it was a gift to the wife.
Nothing says I love you quite like Nicolas Cage making a good Ghost Rider movie, not called Ghost Rider.
Yeah, at 6, Robinson Crusoe in a preview weekend.
Is with this?
Another animation that is doing well despite some terrible reviews.
But where did this come from? Is this... This seems to have arrived out of nowhere.
Yeah, so
it's on buses now.
Yeah, it's... Again, though, the animation... Darren, haven't you been here long enough to realise that animation always does well?
I thought Home did so well because it was a great film.
We didn't say it was we never said it was quality dependent. I mean,
wait
until
Angry Birds comes out.
Oh yeah,
you want to see the unexpected huge hit
of the summer? Yeah.
Angry Birds when it makes its $800 million.
I bet it'll be nowhere near as good as Angry Beavers, though. Remember that show?
I loved Angry Beavers,
but it will be better than Zombie Beavers. I love this free association movie relation test that we're doing.
I guarantee it'll be nowhere near as good as The Birds.
You're stretching it, man.
Don't go off half Hitchcock there.
Off. Get it. Just get it. Robinson Crusoe, yes. The story of Robinson Crusoe, a man marooned on an island and befriends.
But with
animals.
Quirky animal friends.
Parrot Friday, I don't think so. Oh no.
Well, in fairness, of the things named Friday in this week's charts, that's the least offensive one. But we'll get there. At 5, it's Demolition.
This most middle-of-the-road dramedy you could imagine.
Middle-class suffering and grief. It really is. It's not good.
I imagine this is in to go swiftly back out again.
I can cope with middle class grief if it didn't play it as so.
Oh, you've seen it. Right?
I've seen the trailer.
Oh, okay,
and that's enough.
Yeah, that is enough.
Like, at one point, Jake Gyllenhaal, who apparently is the saving grace of this thing.
No, he's not a. He's good. He's not a saving grace. He doesn't have that much grace.
He saves himself. Put it that way. But at one point, you know, the demolition is that he's trying to. Demolish his life so he can build it back up again after tragedy, right? At one point, he buys a JCB...
On eBay.
Sorry, that's not middle class. I don't know one middle class person who could afford a JCB off eBay.
Fair point. He is also an investment banker.
That's not middle class. I don't know what that is. The point is, you're not solving anybody's problems that way, man.
My dad is quite likely to buy a JCB off eBay.
But what's interesting is, again, if you're looking at movie trends, this arrives shortly after that than Bombs and shortly before Night of Cups, which we'll be talking about in a later.
Yeah, it's louder than Bombs, though. That at least has,
I've been hearing great things about it. I'm actually very eager to
see
it.
Primarily from E&J, we loved it. Louder than Bombs at least has a twinge of, not am I saying a twinge, it has reams of just real feeling to it, whereas this just sounds contrived.
This has quirk and like there's a carousel.
Yeah.
At one point he discovers a carousel and it represents whimsy and
Let me guess. Learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. Draw your own conclusions from that. I don't know.
It's just not a good film.
The point is, it doesn't matter who's displaying the emotions, just make sure you're displaying it realistically, for God's sake.
At 4, Zootropolis.
Speaking of animation, now this one's actually really good.
6 weeks in the charts, and 1.8 million. So.
Yeah. And so begins the Disney domination.
Oh, yeah. At 3, breaking the Disney domination temporarily, is Eye in the Sky.
I'm thrilled how well this is doing. Yeah. I really am.
Yeah, it only dropped 17%, so word of mouth has been very, very good.
Look at the rest of that lineup. I mean, it's a quality thriller. And a moral drama, all in one.
And it's competing on, I would argue, a much smaller scale than the films that surround it as well.
Yeah, like the only thing that could I was going to say Bastille Day, but no, that doesn't feed into it at all. It's just, there's a dearth of, you know,
adult
intelligent adult thrillers.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is firmly in that milieu. And it helps, got a great cast, the late Clement Alan Rickman, Alan Mirren. You know, everybody's delivers, and it's ratchets up the tension nicely.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it yet, I recommend it.
And actually,
it is probably the best film on that list.
It is quite possibly the yes, it is. I haven't seen the Jungle Book though. Actually, I'm quite excited to see the Jungle Book.
Haven't seen it yet either. But
yeah. Okay.
Well, let's move on then. Number two.
Add two, the Jungle Book.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler! Sorry.
Just past 2 million after 3 weeks, so
it's
it is
huge business.
Yeah, it is doing the business. All right, dropped just 24% despite the presence of its
older brother, bigger brother. Yes. Speaking of which, what is the deal with the other Jungle Book film?
It got pushed.
But didn't it get pushed back to a year where they are
now
scheduling a second Disney Jungle Book?
Yeah,
possibly.
Now going
so
this is—it's a Ron Howard Jungle Book, isn't it?
No, it's Andy Serkis.
But who's is Andy Serkis directing?
Andy Serkis is directing.
Oh, okay,
yeah, and
that's a gamble. You put something, what could be a big temple in the hands of a.
Is this his first feature? Director.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so now,
but I mean, it is Warner Brothers, right? Isn't
it?
So
it is, and
their model has traditionally been to take chances and hope you end up with Fury Road instead of Batman and Superman.
They've taken chances with Ben Affleck as director,
yeah.
And it's worked
out. And it's worked
well.
Out very well as well.
Yeah, it's true. Affleck, Nolan,
and he also Clint Eastwood he's a Warner Brothers. Like, it's an old studio system. You keep the talent,
which I don't mind because you know it fosters. You've got some fine directors there.
Yeah.
Just make sure you give them the right material, i.e. not Batman versus Superman.
But the other Jungle Book, they've got Alfonso Cuarón in now to tweak it. To assist.
Yeah.
To assist. Make him director already. At least you'd be guaranteed a chance.
That it would look
film.
Great. Hey, we don't know anything about Serkis's Jungle Book yet. It could turn into a media...
Thank heaven for that.
At one, Captain America Civil War. Straight in at number one.
It's a low-budget indie film. It's set during the American Civil War, exploring loss.
If that were the film, I would be all over this.
Captain America is an ironic nickname for a Confederate soldier who finds himself lost.
The Free State of Jones. Prequel. Captain America Civil War absolutely launched into the box office. 922,000 weekend. That's massive.
Can't argue with that. Yes, indeed. Well done. Well done, all.
Yeah, it is getting raves.
Yeah.
It has a certified fresh and rotten tomatoes with 92%.
Audiences love it.
The cast
has charisma. It balances its players well. It looks very, very nice. It's
passed a quarter of $1 billion before it ever opens in the US. It's
on
track for $214 million opening weekend there.
I think we're safe to say that Age of Ultron may have underperformed.
I think
that
Captain America Civil War may be the biggest
Marvel
movie of the year.
Right.
What's competing?
You don't think that Rogue One might do it? Possibly on the Star Wars branding?
I don't know.
Okay. Because that is the only competitor I can see off the top of my head. Unless, of course, Independence Day turns out to be a really surprise sleeper nostalgia hit. Kind of like Jurassic World was last year.
It will, but I don't think it'll make those numbers.
Okay.
No, I think this...
Have you seen that trailer? the landmarks. Yeah, they always go for the landmarks. Wow, that's millions of people dying in one shot. Way to undersell it, man.
How is there any landmarks left?
Exactly. We rebuilt the White House.
We built all the cities.
We also built a little target around it as well to make it easier to sort of attack from space.
You know how the tagline says, we prepared? That's preparation.
We rebuilt all these monuments so it could look brilliant blowing them up.
That's chaos theory.
That's
my Jeff Goldblum impression. I didn't even know I could do one.
You can't.
I liked it. Sorry, this is Darren, the contrarian critic at work.
You fill that role very well.
On to the reviews. So we'll start with the big release of the week, which is Bad Neighbors 2.
And
none of us have seen
none
this.
None of us have seen this.
No. But I... Well, I mean, I could see why they made it, because Bad Neighbours, or Neighbours as it was called in the US, and it's called Neighbours 2 in the US.
No, so, yeah, Neighbours 2 Sorority Rising is what's called.
Sorority
Rising. Oh, because people like Rising and Age of and Ascent in their titles, don't they now?
Except with Dark Knight, they weren't huge on that.
Well, they were pretty big on that.
I was.
They were pretty big on that.
I mean, Neighbours was a big hit, so this is a bit of a no-brainer, really, wasn't it?
I actually really liked Neighbours, and a lot of it was down to Rose Byrne, actually.
I was iffy on it. It was okay. I got a few laughs out of it, but you're absolutely right. Rose Byrne stole the show.
Yeah.
She was great. Mostly just, as far as I can see, mostly it involved Seth Rogen being Seth Rogen and Zac Efron taking his shirt off. From what I've seen of this, I suspect there's not a lot of change.
Well, I mean, comedy sequels are a dangerous beast unless you're like Airplane 2 or whatever. I think it's very hard to do a comedy sequel because your options are either A, do the same jokes again, in which case you're just rehashing, or B, do the jokes that you thought about putting in the first film but weren't good enough, in which case you're going to end up with a subpar sequel.
Something tells me this is going to be a rehashing.
Yeah.
Call it a punch. The fact that I've watched the trailer suggests it.
But I'm curious about
it. But getting Chloe Grace Moretz in there is a good plan, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, I can think of a few people who find her annoying. I pointed at myself there.
Yeah, you may be alone. Anyway.
That's me, yeah.
It'll do well.
Oh, it will do. I mean, yeah. Again, this is something when you look back at the top 10 that is kind of lacking at the moment. An adult
a broad body
comedy.
There's always the space in this any summer for a good comedy, you know. So.
Is this playing.
And when you can't find one, there's always space for just a comedy.
Yeah. Is this.
There's always space for Ted 2.
Yeah.
No, there's no space for Ted 2.
In that case, is this not maybe playing its card a bit early? Would this possibly have done better if they released a little later?
Well, no, it's a Ghostbusters 2, a Ghostbusters reboot coming.
When is that out?
That is August, isn't it? Or is it?
To
the Fact Machine!
Yeah,
it is July 15th.
Ah, okay, so it's close enough. I can give you about, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And I forget we're in May. I guess it's the weather.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
No, there's always going to be a May. So
this is going to do, you know, no matter what. It's getting all right reviews so far. I won't begrudge its success because it is going to be successful. People want to see Zac Efron with his shirt off. People want to see Seth being.
We Are Your Friends would suggest that.
Yeah, that's it.
There's a threshold.
Then again, that's not very good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and Dirty Grandpa.
Onto something that is good or possibly not, depending on which of the two gentlemen with me you're talking to. Evolution.
The David Duchovny made a terrible, terrible choice when he left the X-Files to make this movie.
This is
This is a remake of the David Duchovny.
It certainly isn't. This is a lot more thoughtful film, directed by Lucile Hajilovic. And that is correct. I asked her myself. Interviewed her, you know. Interviews on the website.
Well worth a listen.
Read.
Oh, oops.
That one, I interviewed Richard O'Dowd. That's an audio one. Yeah.
And I did a written review. See?
Apologies.
Keep up.
Aw. And this is why I'm at the slow person table.
We're at the same table.
That means we're all slow.
I know. I'm pointing out the fact.
No,
anyway.
No, because you're slow, I had to spell it out to you.
Can I continue? Anyway, this is Lucile Hajilovic's long-awaited follow-up to her film Innocence, which came out 11 years ago now. And this is...
Isn't she the other half of Gaspar Noé?
That's right, she is. She co-wrote Enter the Void.
Well, that's good credentials there.
And if you haven't seen Innocence, it's quite good. This, I think, is even better. It's the story of a small village, which seems to be inhabited solely by... young boys and women who we presume are their mothers, but there's kind of doubt about that. We're really not sure what the situation is, because there's nothing feels quite right about this from the start. Basically, it comes down to these boys, they're being subjected to weird medical tests. They're brought to this nearby clinic every so often to be tested, and they're given weird food and worms for dinner. Who wants that? and their mothers drug them to put them to sleep and so on and so forth.
And watching videos of surgeries and all this sort of
It's strange, and it gets weirder and weirder, it goes on, more unsettling. And it's, I won't say any more in case I spoil anything, but it builds really nicely to a creepy atmosphere that I think very effectively recalls Cronenberg. It's very, very well put together. It looks great, the production design's fantastic, it's the sound design as well, some really eerie touches. It is designed primarily to deliver nightmare images and
to disorientate.
To disorientate, you know, in that way. It'll plant them in your mind and you just find yourself recalling things later and going, ooh.
I found it too vague in that sense. I found it...
It's not dealing in definites, but I think that's part of why it works.
All right, that would be the opposite. I would say that's why it didn't work as well for me.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was. It was a fairly standard mesh of like oblique imagery and sort of metaphor for like body changes and all this sort of stuff.
Mm.
And it just, I thought a lack of specificity was just. I understand why you would do it, and I understand that it's more effective. Cronenberg, Lynch, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But in this case, I thought it was too deliberately coy, too deliberately vague and too ambiguous, and it didn't work as well for me as it did for you.
Okay, as far as the plot goes, I mean, it comes to an obvious kind of end point, and you can follow it A, B, C,
yeah.
And also it's not a particularly demanding film in that sense.
No.
It's only 81 minutes long, so I recommend it just as
as a curiosity, give it a go.
Nip in, nip out, and see what it does for you. But I really, really liked it. I found it immensely, immensely creepy, and I can use that now and again.
Right,
as could we all.
We can indeed.
You disagree?
I disagree. Well, I don't disagree too strongly. I think it looks nice.
It's
it
not
sounds
very, yeah.
very good, as you said.
Yeah,
like its sound effects are very effective. I thought it was a little too half formed. Like I like ambiguity. I like. Nonsense. I like the idea of
this isn't nonsensical, but I suspect the point is, even though it's not nonsensical, it's not making enough sense at the same time.
Okay. And I thought though it was very, I don't know, like I
you were going to say arty, weren't you?
I definitely wasn't going to say arty.
Okay.
I was thinking more in terms of what is happening in a meaningful sense, if not a plot sense. So whatever about the particulars of why what's happening is happening and what the status quo is, what the reason is, I thought it was very heavy-handed in what it was saying sort of metaphorically.
As in kind of the, like you say, bodily changes.
Bodily changes through puberty, like the idea of growing up and becoming
and reversal
disgusting.
Of age and gender roles, things like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you can read into. But, you know, there's no harm in that. I mean, I enjoy a challenge. And even if that challenge is its primary register, well, so be it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't hate it. It sounds like I hated it, but I didn't. I just wasn't quite as taken.
Okay, fair enough.
Also this week is Florence Foster Jenkins.
This is the second film on the same topic we've had in as many months. It was a French film, Marguerite, that dealt with the same idea, basically. The real-life Florence Foster Jenkins was a very committed opera star, despite the fact that she couldn't sing a damn note. She was absolutely dreadful, but you know, she still managed to sell out Carnegie Hall and had a bit of a cult following. Bowie was a big fan, amongst many others. It just sounds prime for Stephen Frears to come in and make one of his patented
Let's get
from the director of The Queen, Philomena, all over the posters, right there. I think that tells you a lot about where.
Starring Meryl Streep in.
Oh, there you go.
What way she's going to be nominated for an Oscar this year?
Yeah,
there are only four slots left, people.
But apparently, I haven't seen it again. We must always introduce that caveat. But apparently, the star turn of this is Hugh Grant.
Grant, I think, has been due for a while. Like he's had a number of high sort of well-liked performances sort of under the radar recently.
Man from U.N.C.L.E., Cloud Atlas.
Even his vocal performance in Pirates, for example.
He's the best thing about that film.
Oh, he's very good in that. But I think he's been sort of due for a rehabilitation almost. I think this is a nice sort of,
yeah,
I don't want to say coming out film, but you know, like a,
yeah, it's a, it,
emergence.
Yes, there we go.
And Simon Hepburn's in it from Big Bang Theory as well.
Probably less of an emergence film for him.
Yeah. No, I say a lot of people are probably going, what do I know him from? Why? He's usually has a dorkier haircut. Who is he? Honestly, that's what I thought. It wasn't until you mentioned Big Bang Theory I realised who he was.
He was Moist from Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, right?
Yes.
There we go.
There's a name. Anyway, next.
Other musical films. I Saw the Light.
Oh, dear. This is...
In case you're hankering for more musical biopics.
They're a dime a dozen at the moment.
Hey. Yeah. This is the... not long awaited, but considering how many musical biopics we've had over the years, this is the long overdue biopic treatment for Hank Williams, who, you know, kind of rejigged the whole idea behind, you know, popular music when he did Lion Cheat and Art, Your Cheat and Art, something like that. I'm not a country music expert,
yeah,
but basically it is Tom Hiddleston, very unlikely casting as Williams, and Elizabeth Olsen as his wife, and apparently they're the only two things that are worth watching in this. The reviews have been dreadful, and I mean dreadful.
So it's not an enlightening look at the man.
No, I saw somebody refer to it earlier, I saw the shite. Hey.
You heard it here first, or second?
Second, I can't claim credit for that. It's just, yeah. Why? Why are we still getting music biopics like this?
Well, on the other hand, we could get music biopics like Miles Ahead.
True, but by all accounts, Miles Ahead is a better film.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate what it tried to do more than what it actually did.
I agree with you on that, certainly. So, yeah, no love for Eyes All the Light here, I'm afraid.
Right. Well. Then we have a re-release of
Johnny Guitar,
the 54 Western, starring Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford is as a cowboy. There you go. I mean, what more need you say?
Well, the poster said it was Joan's greatest triumph. So, you know.
That's what the posters did back then. But
amazing.
That's a subversive idea as you find in Westerns. You know, they're just, how many Westerns can you think of with, you know, commanding leading women like that? The only other one that immediately springs to mind.
James Got a Gun.
No, not that. I was going to say Sam Raimi's The Quick and the Dead with Sharon Stone.
No, that was the one that popped into my head as well. Yeah.
Not a bad film. But this, as far as that kind of plot goes and that kind of idea, this is kind of the one to beat. It's Nicholas Ray. Was this before or after he made Rebel Without a Cause?
It's 54, so...
That was after. After.
Yeah. So Rebel Without a Cause was... 55, so it's before.
Oh, before, I beg your
pardon.
Sorry. Beg your pardon. Yeah. Just before, yeah. He made, in between the two, he made Run for Cover.
And then Hot Blood, it's not bad.
Not a bad run?
No. I suppose that's as subversive as Westerns got in the 50s. And Joan Crawford, she's just a force of nature when you watch her on screen, any film. But mind you, if you want to see her real forceful interpretation, watch... Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford. Anybody here ever seen Mommy Dearest? That's a strange film.
No.
Yeah, I'd say watch that with a couple of beers. It's good.
So as previously mentioned, Robinson Crusoe is a pre-release, or was a weekend last week, so it's actually out this week, but we know next to nothing about it other than it's animated. And
has cute animals in it.
Yeah.
And the reviews have not been great there either.
If you want cute animals, go see Zootopia.
Yeah.
Or Zootropolis.
Either are. They're both.
Both
good
options.
All roads.
I find them very similar.
And then last film of the week, Terrence Malick. There was a time when Terrence Malick films took about 10 years to come around.
And everybody waited bated breath.
Now they come around a lot and everyone's a little weary of them.
Yeah, so we're talking Knight of Cups.
Yes.
I saw this back last November, and at that stage, I saw it at a film festival, and at that stage, it didn't look like it was going to get a cinema release at all, because it had premiered at Berlin the previous February, and went down completely down the middle, divided audiences, and yeah, it seemed unsure. It was only after the new year and a few more critics came round on it that it finally secured the cinema release. And I really don't know why, because it's... I don't get this. There's a lot of love going around for this in certain arenas, and I can't fathom it. It's not good. I mean, particularly not good.
It's based in Hollywood, right? It's based in and around Hollywood.
Yeah, this is Malick does Hollywood. You know, I've seen so many comparisons. This is, oh, it's Malick's Spring Breakers. It's Malick's Maps to the Stars. It's Malick... It's a Malick film, first and
it's
foremost.
Malick's The Player.
Yeah.
Well, with the amount of big names that are in it, it almost is. Except they come.
Malick does Robert Altman. Could you imagine?
Yeah, we got that. The Thin Red Line. Everybody's in that. But this is. It centers on Christian Bale's character, who is, according to the production notes, which I had to read to be sure, he's a screenwriter, but. I couldn't be sure of that from the film itself. Who basically spends his time wandering around various locales around LA, moping, and basically encountering different people in his life. Cate Blanchett plays his estranged wife. Natalie Portman plays a woman who enters his life in the final third. Imogen Poots plays his mistress. Brian Dennehy plays his father. Wes Bentley is a brother. So on and so forth. And they're all so underwritten. In fact, they weren't written at all. This film was apparently filmed with no script.
Fantastic for a movie about a writer.
Well, there you go. I mean, doesn't that sum it up? There's, I get what Malick is trying to do. This is probably the most obvious attempt of him trying to put himself on screen so far. You can see elements of it in... particularly his previous two films, To the Wonder and The Tree of Life, better films than this. And, this is clearly going to be the closest to whatever kind of experience he has had as a director in Hollywood. But it says precisely nothing about that experience that we haven't heard before and done better in so many other films. So Hollywood is vapid and soul-withering. You don't say. And... there's nothing compelling about watching Bale, who looks lost in some scenes, absolutely lost, trying to bring some credence or gravitas to it. And nobody seems to know what they're doing. With the exception of Bentley, who gives the most interesting performance, if only because, the brother is supposed to be wayward.
That's the Eva Green effect for you, isn't it? Because he was also the same in We Are Your Friends as well.
That's true. He was the best thing in that as well.
Yeah.
But
he's great in The Hunger Games.
Yeah. There's everybody here seems to be playing some variety of cliche. Like Blanchett is bitter and kind of washed up, and the likes of Imogen Poots and Theresa Palmer come and go as flirtations who offer introspection, and Natalie Portman gets nothing to do. At one point she sticks her big toe in Bale's mouth, and that was the point when I turned to the person sat next to me and I had to go, what the hell? What? Right. Random. who else? Frida Pinto, Antonio Banderas, they crop up, they come, they go, and it adds up to nothing. Absolutely nothing. It is frustrating. It's a mentally frustrating experience, and I say that as somebody who adores Malick's early works. Badlands is still one of my favourite films of all time. He's a supreme visual artist, and I will give Night of Cups this. It looks great. It's shot by Emmanuel Lubezki, so that couldn't but be the case. But it says nothing, and it says it very whispery.
How many other people were in it that didn't make the final cut?
That begs
the Sean Penn effect. Yeah,
yeah. There is. You'd wonder. All I know is that his next one, Voyage of Time, is supposed to be out later next year. They're hoping for late film festivals. I'm not particularly looking forward to it.
Okay.
On the evidence of Night of Cups. I really didn't like this. It was frustrating. And it's a pity Jay isn't here, because he's a big Malick fan as well, and he loved it.
Yeah. Right, not quite your cup of tea, then.
We'll hopefully hear from Jay next week.
Yes, I think we'll have to say good night on that point.
Oh, God.
Hey, he...
I can't get
he's
away with
used to, we're used to him making puns.
We indulge him. What can we do?
Right, we'll leave there for the week.
Bye.
Toodaloo.
So long.